We made this.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe on the We Made This Podcast Network. My name's Mark and I am your host on this episode, and we're going to be discussing the fifth episode of the Disney Plus series, Marvel's Hawkeye. I didn't make a note of what the episode was called, so I'm going to ask Craig, who is my co-host. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
Do you remember what the episode was called?
It's called Ronin. Simply Ronin. Not Keaton.
There we go. Look at me being, like, really professional and stuff. Shit.
That's the episode. It's called Ronin, brackets, not Keating. That's what it's called.
I hope that that's true, but I think it was just called Ronin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hawkeye Season 1, Episode 5 is the first time, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, but I think it's the first time we've had a cold open on any of the shows. We've had, obviously, previously ons, but have we had a cold open?
I think we have, yeah. Was there not commonly flashbacks in... Am I thinking of something else? There's definitely commonly flashbacks in one of them. I'm sure Loki had a couple.
But even so, it's quite rare.
Yeah.
And it does tend to be something really significant. And, well, we learnt that Yelena was blipped, which explains a lot about why she wasn't anywhere around when we had Endgame. I think she had to be blipped, really.
Yeah. It's so that she can still be the same age she was in Black Widow.
And also because she didn't get involved in the fight against Thanos. And you would have thought that Black Widow would have gone, sis, come and give us a hand, love.
Yeah, she was too busy not existing at the time. I think that was the problem.
Yeah, well, funny that.
Yeah.
But I think I've not watched Endgame again since Black Widow or obviously this episode. I wonder whether there's an element of, should there have been some reference to her? Should there have been some kind of grief when it came to Natasha? Explicit grief that she lost her sister in the blip? Or is it enough that they all say, we all lost someone?
It could be that Natasha had no idea either way, because at the end of Black Widow, she sends Yelena off on her merry way to go and free other Black Widows. Well, she goes and finds the displaced Avengers. That's her plan. So maybe she's just not sure what happened to Yelena during that period of time. Did she get blipped or is she in deep hiding? It could be either. You just don't know.
True. And, well, we know what Hawkeye was doing during the blip, and that's kind of what's the main focus of this series, really, is that his, I don't want to say comeuppance, but maybe rehabilitation. No, not rehabilitation. Redemption for what he did during the blip.
Yeah, it's all about the consequences catching up with him, about the he's unable to run from what he did, really. He's tried, but he's not able to, because it's just takes nothing for stuff to be uncovered and for it all to come back again. It's one of those, I made a mistake and I'm still paying for it type stories, which is very common in, well, anything really. But it's, yeah, the idea that your mistakes might never really truly leave you. They follow you around, you're constantly reminded of them, you have to take responsibility for them, more importantly, things like that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I know people in recovery, and since I've got to know those people, I've started to resent society even more than I ever used to, because holy shit, society does not forgive its addicts. And I now understand why people relapse, because if you're not forgiven, you might as well fucking do it again, you know?
From a certain mindset, yeah. There's obviously other reasons you should find not to relapse. But yeah, society does give up on people. Or, say, give up. Giving up suggests that there was any support in the first place, which, to be fair, there isn't.
There is personal support. And
yeah,
obviously, knowing people in recovery has, I was always the kind of person that would support that kind of thing, but getting close to someone has made me realize just how awful recovery is. And it could be made so much easier if society was better. And that isn't really a good comparison to someone who's been a murderer. But even so, if you've done your time and you've been released from prison, you shouldn't have to never have a job again. You shouldn't have to always feel like you've never been forgiven. What's the point of being punished if, when the punishment allegedly finishes, you continue to be punished?
Yeah, with Clint's situation, I think it's slightly different because he didn't ever really get punished for being Ronan, because all that happened was Natasha snapped him out of his murderous rampage and said, get back with the Avengers, we'll get on with this. And then the Ronan identity just got buried, or at least he tried to bury it. Now it's coming back. But I don't think anybody in authority really knows who the Ronan
was.
That's
true.
So it's not going to chase him around in that sense. I mean, he was dealing with the consequences of his decision to rebel against the Sokovia Accords, which is a punishment he didn't quite complete, because half the world got wiped out. So I guess he just jimmied off his anklet and went on his murderous rampage.
Yeah, and I guess you could say that he has had to live with his own conscience once he was in a clearer mind, because of how his relationship with Natasha kind of snapped him out of it. And that's not going to be a fun time either. But yeah, you are right. He hasn't done a prison sentence or anything like that. You are right.
Yeah, he's just put it behind him, or tried to. And this show is about how he hasn't really been able to put it behind him.
Let's go back to the cold open very briefly. I'm really pleased to finally actually see some of the widows post-Black Widow, because as much as it was a fun film and a cool film, it just feels like it was done at the wrong time. Why wasn't it done before Infinity War and Endgame? And there's this huge kind of chronological gap where we've seen no widows at all in the most cataclysmic event, even though we saw literally all the other people. Full confession, I haven't seen Eternals, so I don't know why they weren't there. But the widows and the Eternals, did they explain in Eternals in a way that you thought was okay how they weren't about?
Yeah, basically it's, we're here to fight the Deviants. Anything that's not to do with the Deviants, we don't get involved in. That was it.
Good. Fine. Unless you have an answer that I've not spotted, there wasn't really any reason why there weren't widows involved.
I suppose not, but I get the impression that they're maybe just waiting to be sort of activated, given their mission. So when the organization is torn apart, then that can't be done. So they're just sitting in deep cover or whatever, just waiting. Or maybe some of them will already be kind of finishing off assignments that they were doing. It was a bit confusing, because looking at the Black Widow film, this big screen that Ray Winston had a lot of people on it. It seemed like it was a very wide-reaching organisation. It's almost
exactly.
Like every woman in the world is a Black Widow, near enough.
I mean, maybe not, but yeah, I know what you mean. The scale that it at least suggested would... Anyway, I liked seeing some widows is probably what I'd like to say most about that.
Yeah.
We then do have the intro and the previously, and the first scene is, again, it emphasised to me what I love about this particular programme, is the street level, with two scenes where martial artists had their wounds patched up. Again, harking back to my love of Daredevil, there was quite a significant character in Night Nurse who basically patched up everybody that got the shit kicked out of him, who, you know, weren't Thor. And I really liked it, and I liked the mirror of the alleged protagonist of Kate and the alleged antagonist of Echo both going through the same experience of, I've had the crap kicked out of me. I kicked some ass, but I also had the crap kicked out of me. You get in a fight, even if you win it, you're gonna get hurt, you know?
Yeah, it's these conflicts take a toll on people. It's a physical toll, and it's something you wouldn't get even from Captain America, because he's able to take a punch better than anybody. Or Spider-Man, well, in Spider-Man movies you do see him bleeding a lot and things like that, but even then he has enhanced healing abilities. So yeah, these are just normal skilled people that have to deal with injuries after they've been in a fight, except Yelena, apparently, who still looked pristine after the fight.
True. But, the reality is, if you're a fan of MMA, you've got a favourite fighter. You have to wait a minimum of 3 months between each fight because they need to heal. However badass they were, unless it's a one-punch knockout. But that's so damn rare. And you can't have an MMA fight every week. You just simply can't. You need the time to heal and rehabilitate. And I like that that's acknowledged, not only for one side of the fight, but the other side of the fight as well.
Yeah, both Kate and Maya took a fair bit of punishment, and they have to lick their wounds afterwards.
The next scene, I just love how Yelena is an absolute badass, but she likes macaroni cheese.
Yeah, there's a lot of humanity to Yelena. There was something that the Black Widow film did very well, with her sense of humour and just her warmth, I suppose. It's a nice contrast to the trained, cold-blooded killer that she can also be.
The thing about the MCU is that it always does this perfectly. You know that she's a badass. You know her skills. You know what she can do. But when you learn that she likes macaroni cheese, it's just like, that's really nice. And they do that so much with all the characters that there's a reason why we get so emotional over all these things, because just a tiny little throwaway line about macaroni cheese made me love this character tenfold more than I had for the entire Black Widow film, you know?
Mm. And that scene was really good. I think her and Kate's personalities, they complement each other brilliantly. And I really love the way that Yelena is just toying with her throughout this. She's in total control of the situation. She knows it. Kate knows it. And they both just have to sit there until Yelena decides that the conversation's over. That's what's happening there.
Yeah, you're right. And the realistic take that Kate has shows you that in such a short period of time, which they said it's 2 weeks that she's known Clint Barton, that she's already ever so slightly damaged, ever so slightly jaded, and kind of in and understands how the whole situation works when you're doing vigilante type stuff. And I don't know whether, I think that's pretty dark, but also when stuff like this happens, it does escalate at a speed of knots, you know?
Although she does still have that romanticized notion of what it means to be an Avenger and so on, because she does bring up the whole, well, when you do what he does, there's just going to be collateral damage. That's what it happens. It's unavoidable. And Yelena's not willing to accept that. But as a widow, she's surgical, right? Her entire setup, her training is all about not making ripples. She goes in, she deals with the thing she needs to deal with, and then she leaves. There's not supposed to be any collateral damage. I mean, if you watch Black Widow, they tear up a street in Prague or wherever they are. Or no, it's Budapest, isn't it? That's where they are. But they tear up a street there because it's an MCU film and it needs to be a big vehicle chase or whatever. But for the most part, Yelena would sneak in, kill her target, and then leave, and nobody would know she was ever there. So the Avengers are counter to that because they're bold, they're in your face, they're bringing down buildings, and they're fighting alien threats that are number in the thousands or whatever. So yeah, it's a very different outlook, and it's that whole romanticism associated with the whole superhero concept. I mean, in the show already, we've seen the musical that commemorates the events of the Avengers. We've seen the plaque,
which is where wonderful.
You've seen the plaque where they first assembled, and Hawkeye, Clint getting free meals because people appreciate him for what he did. So there is that celebrity culture that follows the Avengers around, but there's this dark undertone to it. Is every time there's a fight, thousands of people die, or buildings fall down, or people lose things and lose people, and it's a mess, really. And you can see why people wouldn't appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think Kate's definition of an Avenger really is very interesting. It acknowledges the kills, which maybe people would turn a blind eye to, like you suggested. And the word collateral damage is so fucking perfect, because collateral damage, as much as you might want to paint it as a necessity, it is still horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible, horrible concept that comes from war. And this isn't a term that should be used lightly. And I think Kate uses it more lightly than she should do. And she doesn't quite realize what collateral damage is.
Yeah, which is interesting, because she was collateral damage and as a child.
Good point.
Her dad died. We assume that he died in the Battle of New York, although there seems to be suggestions out there that Eleanor might have killed him and used that as an excuse, but I don't know. I think that's maybe a bit too dark. I don't think that's the case, but she was collateral damage. Her home was torn apart by the Battle of New York. She lost her father, so it's interesting how she doesn't see herself in that light. She sees it is all necessary because ultimately they won the day, so therefore the collateral damage is just something you have to deal with, which, yeah, is kind of true. It's, the Avengers didn't lure the Loki's forces to New York. They were just there, and there's no real way to get them out. And ever since Man of Steel, there's been all this debate around, oh, look at all the property damage you see in these big blockbusters now. And it's as if it shouldn't be a thing. And I think there's been some reactionary stuff where, yeah, we'll need to remove the, you know, the risk to life and stuff like that. And it's, but no, because I like to know that there are stakes associated with that. There's people caught in the crossfire. The heroes have to be aware of that. But at the same time, they're not equipped to deal with it entirely. There's, you know, they can do what they can, but at the same time, there's just going to be people that are going to get stuck under rubble and stuff. They can't manage it all.
Yeah, exactly. And Kate does seem to understand when you commit to it that you will lose things and that things that you value are at risk. And again, she's only been in 2 weeks, but she's already in too deep.
Yeah. Yeah, the situation has escalated far beyond her ability to handle it. And you're getting a real sense of that in this episode. That conversation she has with her mother underscores that, where it's Clint doesn't think I'm a superhero and I don't either. So she's starting to doubt her own ability to handle this.
And I'm going to go back to Yelena. And for the rest of the episode, I am going to call you Craig McKenzie. Not just Craig, I'm going to call you Craig McKenzie. Because the Kate Bishop thing, just, I loved it. Even in the fucking text message later on in the episode.
Are you just saying that because Kate Bishop? Are you just saying that so that I know that you know it? Yeah, that was a good
exactly one. Craig McKenzie.
Yeah, there's a great interrogation tactic, actually. It's to throw her off balance, isn't it? She keeps doing that. Why does she keep doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, Craig McKenzie. I'm not going to stop doing that either, because it absolutely pops me. Because, again, all this darkness, all this conversation about what vigilantism does to you and how damaged everyone is, even though it's still dark that she does this, because she's right when she assumes that it is to tell her how much she knows about her, it's still funny and it's still playful, even though it's dark as fuck, and it's genius, Craig McKenzie.
Yeah, very genius. I think that conversation is just works so well. And there's that hint that they can be friends as well in a later circumstance, I suppose. It's that, you know, it's that thanks for the girls' night, truly. It's like Yelena is still looking for a bit of companionship and kindness, I suppose.
What are your thoughts on the general kind of fandom thought on that they are building up a young Avengers and that it will have characters like Kate Bishop, Yelena in it, and that kind of thing? Do you think that that's something that they're going to push for as a TV series or a film?
I think it's certainly on the cards. It feels like for this phase, they're just throwing a few things into the mix and seeing what people respond to. So yeah, if people do respond well to Kate Bishop, which they have, Yelena, which they have, Ms. Marvel when she turns up, there's no reason not to put all these people in a Young Avengers type setup. Spider-Man maybe, because we know that Tom Holland is sticking around in the MCU for a bit longer. So
true. Yeah,
I think he would be best fixed to lead a Young Avengers team perhaps in the future, but maybe not. I think there's plenty of characters that you could throw into that space, and I would be surprised if they weren't at least thinking about it. There's also suggestions they're going to do the Thunderbolts, which is why you've got John Walker and so on, and Falcon and Winter Soldier. So I think there's a lot of pieces in play that they could just combine in different ways. Yeah, and that, no problems there.
Is it something you think you'd like to see?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I always like to see these characters interacting. So yeah, there's no reason to not want it to happen.
Going back to the Netflix shows, I'm fucking obsessed with them, and I know I am, and that's okay. The Defenders was a real big deal to me, and I really enjoyed it. I loved seeing a team of characters I'd seen have individual shows before, and yeah, I would love to see that. I would love to see that happen. And I do think that they're pushing towards it, or at least hinting, maybe we could do this if you like the characters, if enough of you watch it. And fingers crossed that enough people watch it.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Before we move on about this scene, I do have a question for you. Have you ever eaten reindeer?
I have not, but apparently it's very tough.
No, neither have I. And I used, before I went veggie, I used to quite enjoy eating exotic meats. And reindeer was one of the ones I never got round to eating. So I'm never going to eat reindeer. Do you think you'd eat reindeer if you had the chance?
I think if I was in a restaurant, it was on the menu, I would give it a go, yeah.
Reindeer and chips?
Yeah. Well, maybe not chips, but yeah, who knows? I'm guessing Yelena has killed one in the wild when she's been on a mission, and that's how she's eaten one.
I'm going to want to talk very briefly about Jack, or as I've been calling him, the Swordsman. Because he's based on a character from the comics that I know reasonably well, because he was in the Avengers in the 90s when I was reading those comics. And he's a reformed bad guy in the comics.
Just like Hawkeye.
And he's clear. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, exactly that. That he got caught in this episode and got taken away. And Clint was a reformed bad guy in the comics. They didn't actually do that at the start, which is what they did in the comics with Clint. But, you know, Ronin was a bad guy. He was an absolute cold-blooded killer. And I'm interested to see whether or not, long-term, they want to invest in the Swordsman as a character with a redemption arc. Because I think he's fun. I think he's cool.
I get the impression in this show he's more of a scapegoat, because any showing of Jack that you've seen, other than his skills with a sword, obviously, is that he's kind of incompetent. He's not much use. He doesn't have a lot of money. He's marrying into money. So I think they're certainly the writers wanted you to point your finger at him early on. And then I guess it's Eleanor that's behind everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's Eleanor and Fisk that have framed him for their crimes.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because that's a very different introduction to the character than the comic books, which again was the same with Clint Barton.
Yeah,
but Clint in the comics, he'd actually done his time and been released, if I remember rightly, when he joined the Avengers.
Yeah, he was an Iron Man villain to start with, and then he ran his course there, and then he joined the Avengers, and he was part of that era where they were bringing in sort of reformed criminals. Wanda and Pietro and later Black Widow were part of that era, where the underpowered Avengers team, as it was at the time, led by Cap, when the others buggered off.
So I'm going to move on a little further, and I sat and cringed when Kate left 100 phone messages for Clint. Obviously, it wasn't a romantic relationship, but it was very much a kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink to pretty much everyone who has done that at some point, you know? Yeah. And I sat there and cringed, and I remembered his name, and I was like, he has not spoken to me since and blanked me when I've seen him in the street.
Yeah, there was an element of that, but also there's a bit of her recognition that she's part of the situation, whether she likes it or not. So it's not as simple as Clint saying, back off, I'm going to leave you out of this, because Yelena's gone straight to her rather than anybody else. So she can't just walk away from this.
Yeah, and I think she maybe could have done if Yelena hadn't decided that she wasn't going to. And there's a very kind of premeditated decision by Yelena there, that this girl is one of these remarkable people now that will be involved in this kind of thing, whether she likes it or not.
Yeah, and I guess Kate maybe doesn't want to be as involved as she is, because it is getting a bit too real now. But at the same time, Clint is the only support she can think of. She doesn't have anybody else to turn to. So the fact that he's not replying, although I suppose at that point he was passed out on a couch, so he wouldn't have been looking at his phone. But at the same time, so he's a bit driven to solve the problem on his own at that point anyway. But I don't think he realises how deep Kate is in as well, because he doesn't know about Eleanor at that point.
No, and for an episode that is quite dark in tone, there was a lot of really, really kind of hit you and make you laugh out physically loud humour. Like even the next scene, the tracksuit mafia guys in the van, the little scream when the arrow kind of was inches from his face. I howled. They'd been sat there trying to be the big I am. And then the moment there was a threat, it was like, ah! And I just, why can the MCU do this? In so many other contexts, it would be incongruous to have dark, 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 grim, 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 death, 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 lol. But there's something about the MCU, the films and the teleseries, that just, they bring you up, they bring you down, they make you laugh, they make you cry, and it's just so expertly done, but I can't quite put my finger on why or how.
I think some of it's to do with timing, but I do quite like how idiotic a lot of the tracksuit mafia are. They're just, they're just hired street goons, right? They're in that position because they're not very intelligent, but they can maybe use a gun and steal things, and it doesn't really matter if they get arrested because they're idiots and there's so many that can replace them. But at the same time, it makes me wonder why someone like Wilson Fisk would be in charge of them. I mean, he has his other interests and I imagine he's in charge of a lot of gangs, but it's just a bit strange that he would tolerate this kind of incompetence. I mean, one of the guys, when they read the note, it's like, but we're not Maya. It's like, well, yeah, obviously.
He probably doesn't even know who the fuck these guys are that were in the van.
Yeah.
They're so kind of low level. And I think that's a thing that I have thought about this series, that the tracksuit mafia, Maya is a very, very serious threat, a badass, a real kind of remarkable people. But the tracksuit mafia have always felt like jobbers to me. And suddenly, like you said, with the revelation that we have the Kingpin, suddenly the tracksuit mafia are more of a threat, even though they're still jobbers, because of who's behind them.
Yeah, and then you've got people on there like Kazi, who's a cut above, so I guess they're not completely useless.
And, I mean, obviously, there was only for maybe 5 or 8 minutes, there was who's the big guy, after Clint used that term on the phone to his wife. But I felt that the fact that she knows as much as she does and they talk about it casually, I don't know whether I was expecting her to know that much. And the fact that he's confided in her, that was a big deal to me.
There is some stuff around what is Laura's past. That's his wife's name, isn't it, Laura? What got her and Clint together? Why did they set up a farm somewhere so that they can be away from everything? I know there's some rumours that maybe she's the MCU version of Mockingbird, but I'm hoping not, because I want the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. version of Mockingbird back. But that's just me. Probably not just me, but it's something I want, because I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it was a great show and I want it recognised once again. But anyway, so I think she'll be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent of old or something like that.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting that maybe we've seen Kingpin. So is it that the Netflix shows with Kingpin in are a multiverse, like in What If? Or have we seen by the Kingpin arriving that the Netflix shows are considered to have happened in the MCU before the blip? They must have happened before the blip because there was no acknowledgement of the blip. Unfortunately for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's a lot in that that kind of needs some splaining if that can be brought back into the MCU, or it could be a what-if alternative reality, you know?
Yeah, I think they essentially established at some point the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was in a different universe, a slightly different universe, just one over, that's mostly the same, but the blip doesn't happen in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And the reason that it doesn't is because the producers weren't told what the plan was following, or even for Infinity War, and weren't following it, so they just did their own thing.
Yeah. And so that does make it problematic. But, you know, with What If and Loki, It means that it can be at some point incorporated into the main MCU thing as an alternative reality.
Yeah, or but just slightly know. Different versions of the characters, like Daisy and so on, but exactly. In the MCU, yeah.
But we just don't know what the situation is with the Netflix shows after the revelation of Kingpin. Is Vincent D'Onofrio playing Kingpin as the Kingpin, but he's never met Daredevil before. He's got a free run, and during the blip, he did this, 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 and this. And is that what you want, or do you want all of the Netflix shows acknowledged as part of the continuity of the MCU?
I'd be okay if they were just cagey with it. If they just, some of it may have happened the way that you think it did in the Netflix shows, some of it didn't. We'll pick and choose elements of it. So yeah, it could be that this Fisk has never tangled with Daredevil, or never tangled with him in the way that he did in the Netflix shows. Because I think they did say that if they ever brought them in, they would make some alterations to their histories and stuff like that, because Daredevil, as it was, is too dark for the MCU, so they'd have to change it a little bit anyway. But I can't imagine you would see Fisk in even this show slamming someone's head into a car door till it pops. So they would have to make a few changes.
You see, I want it to just be that it's all happened. I can't in my head see anything, as brutal as it was, like you say, I can't see anything in the continuity, at least as I think about it now, that could be considered a change to the MCU that would be a damage or a contradiction. So I just want it to be real. I desperately want it to be these shows not only are canon. Hell, I just want Daredevil Series 4, if I'm being brutally honest with you.
Yeah. And I think it might happen. I think it's certainly a strong possibility. I mean, Fisk's appearance here in a photograph certainly opens the door for them to take different elements from those shows and play with them in different ways.
So, 10 years ago, there's no way in any shape or form that I would have expected there to be a 18-rated film in the X-Men universe. Not only did we get Deadpool, we got Logan. Two incredible films for adults. So I don't feel like that MCU has to always be family-friendly, because it did work. And those two films, well, three films, including Deadpool 2, got smash hit numbers compared to a lot of the other films that they had in the X-Men universe. I want 18-rated Marvel stuff. And if you're under 18 when it's launched, something to look forward to when you grow up.
Yeah, or maybe your parents are just like, yeah, they can watch this, whatever, it doesn't matter. Just like mine were.
I would like to say on behalf of the We Made This Podcast Network that we don't feel that people should be watching rated films that are over the age, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but, you know, whatever. Your kids are going to see
that. Oh, people fucking do. So I've always said that I'm not in favour of censorship, because censorship sucks. But I am quite in favour of enforcing age restrictions. But I'm 43. I'm not 16 wanting to see an 18. Yeah. So what do I know? I'm old.
Yeah, you're not 16 and not able to watch Deadpool. That's not what the situation is.
Exactly right. But yeah. You know what I'm getting at.
I think Kevin Feige did say that they were going to keep Deadpool as it was, because it was working, so there's no reason to change it. So a good chance at least Deadpool films will continue to be R-rated or 18s or 15s, whatever they were over here. So yeah, that's the thing, they can do stuff.
Yeah, and you know, we wouldn't have had Daredevil Series 3. We wouldn't have had any Punisher at all if the original contract hadn't been extended, because they did well.
Yeah.
So these shows and these characters have proved that they're popular enough. So why wouldn't Disney go, ching, 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 cash cow?
Yeah, and certainly with people responding so well to the actors, trying to get D'Onofrio's Fisk in the MCU had to be pretty high up their list of priorities. Even if it's a different version of the character, let's have this actor playing him, because he was so damn good at it and everybody responded well to it.
I guess we can only hope and wait to find out. The reality is we are incredibly spoiled at the moment with how much MCU content we get. You and I are old enough to remember when, you know, the Man-Thing film was, oh my goodness, there's a fucking Marvel film coming to the cinema. And then it was a schlock horror with a, what, 20 million budget or something ludicrous? I have a fondness for Man-Thing. If anyone wants to talk about Man-Thing on this show, I'll do it. But it was fucking naff. We should probably talk about the Carlot scene, which I really enjoyed. Proper martial arts fight, incorporating the enhanced leg of Echo and some decent badassery from Ronin. And yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. It was short and sweet and a proper kind of martial arts fight. My jam. Did you feel the same?
Yeah, and there was a bit of a Batman quality to it as well, with him taking out all the guards around her before going for her directly. Yes.
Yeah, it really was cool. I don't have much more to say about it other than it was cool, and I felt like it once again established just how deadly Clint Barton is, whatever fucking role he's playing. It was, by taking those out, you're right, it was very, very Batman.
Although one thing that struck me about it was Maya's approach. I said in early reviews with Kate, she has skills. She's been trained, she has skills, but she needs them to be refined. And Maya's the same. She has a lot of skills, she's well trained, but when it comes to applying them practically in a fight like that, she's got a lot to learn, because I guess there's something different about getting involved in quote-unquote superhero fights, because they are very chaotic and random, so your training on its own might not be enough.
And I think Echo is street level, because she is a outstanding martial artist with the enhanced abilities. She's, well, let's be honest, she's quite similar to Daredevil, who in the comic book she was quite close to and had a relationship with very briefly. And again, after seeing her in this, I am excited for the spin-off.
Yeah, we're really good. And the approach they've taken to communication in this show gives you a bit of a primer for what to expect on that. So there'll be a lot of ASL used in the show, which probably means it'll be mostly subtitled, I'll be guessing.
Yeah, and if you didn't know, if a British person who reads sign was watching it, they would have had to use the subtitles too, because ASL is different to BSL, American Sign Language, British Sign Language.
Yeah, I'm aware that I don't know either of them, but yeah, I'm aware that there's differences. And I wonder why that is. It's very odd.
No, I know. Wouldn't it be nice if it was universal? But yeah, I can spell my name in BSL, but that's about it.
It's more than I can do. So, yeah, well then.
Mark's only four syllables, man. It's not much to remember.
Well, you can't do your second name. Oh, well, yeah, I have no respect then. Whatever.
But I think you're right. I think that it's added to the drama in a lot of ways, the fact that they've got deaf characters in there, and not in a shitty way, in a really kind of well thought out and intelligent way that does add to the series.
Well, one of the themes is communication, and the fact that characters don't know things or haven't been told things or are having things hidden from them. So it all feeds into that communication piece. And it's interesting that Clint takes the time to make sure she understands things, because he's not just warning her off going after his family. He's giving her information that she doesn't have. It's, someone wanted your dad dead. I was there because someone told me where he was. So it's not just me that's to blame for all this. I was pointed in that direction. Someone in your organization wanted your dad dead. Probably your boss. Start thinking about who you can trust. And that comes up in an interaction with Kazi immediately after, where she asks him a couple of questions, and it's clear that she's lost a bit of trust in him.
And, I mean, it isn't explicit. It isn't your boss, Wilson Fisk, but it's a pretty fair assumption that her boss is Wilson Fisk.
Well, it's all but confirmed now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, she does have a relationship, kind of a father-daughter relationship with the Kingpin in the books. So it's 99% sure, isn't it? Unless there's another crime boss that we might be seeing, but I don't think so.
Well, it's explicitly referenced as the uncle, and then when you see the uncle with the, you know, the white suit and you know, adjusting his cufflinks and the deep laugh, it's definitely him now, isn't it?
It's definitely him. I think you're right. And the only other thing really that I wanted to talk about is I know that hosts of this show have been saying the actor is wasted, Eleanor Bishop's definitely going to be the bad guy, and they were right. Does the fact that it was quite obvious spoil your enjoyment? Because it didn't for me. It was still a dark moment. It was still a revelation that I enjoyed.
Not really, because I think the show was building to it. It's not that it's a reveal that's come out of nowhere and that's been speculated about on the internet. It's also, there's more to her than that. Because whenever she shares a scene with Kate, there's a definite compassion there. So she definitely cares about her daughter. And there's a strong connection there that makes her more interesting, because she isn't just someone who's interested in whatever. For example, the hiring a Yelena thing to kill Clint was very much, or at least partially, motivated by protecting Kate.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And again, that's established in this episode as well, with the way she patches her up after her fight.
Yeah. Yeah, and I always knew you were going to find your path. You knew exactly the person you're going to be, stuff like that. So, yeah, anytime they share a scene, it's always really loaded with compassion and well-being and everything. So it's a really good relationship there. So the reveal that she's a villain or pulling strings of sorts isn't a surprise. And there's not a lot of surprises in that respect anyway. But the fact that it shatters Kate's worldview, that's where the drama comes from. For me, because Kate has been making assumptions about certain things. Her entire perception was that Jack was the villain, was someone that she was she needed to bring down. And now it's, oh no, my mother. I don't know what to do with that. So everything that she took for granted is now upended. It's also her privilege background that she comes from is now tainted by where that money might have come from.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the important point, isn't it? That the revelation isn't a huge shock to us, but what's important is that it's a shock to Kate, and that's really important and really well done.
Yeah.
Because, like we said earlier, spoilers are a thing. I didn't want to believe that we were going to see Kingpin, Vincent D'Onofrio, because I wanted it so much. Obviously, I'd heard the rumours, but rumours are rumours. There were rumours of Mephisto in in WandaVision, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd have quite liked to have seen Mephisto, but because I didn't get myself hyped about it because they were only rumours, I didn't mind so much when we didn't get Mephisto, whereas I still popped big time for Fisk. I would have hated if it hadn't been Vincent D'Onofrio. That would have been worse than it not being Fisk. But I absolutely popped for it, and I was over the moon. But it was over the moon at the confirmation rather than over the moon at a shock, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it shapes the expectations differently, because the rumour mill has been in full force and D'Onofrio himself has been fueling it, because I guess he enjoys doing these kinds of things. But I think it undercuts the power of the reveal some of the time, because when it happens, instead of you thinking, oh my God, wow, they've brought him back, it's, oh, that's cool. I'm glad that that rumour was true. And it's, you know, it's still good to see, and it's still interesting and it's still exciting, but it's not what it would have been if you had no idea.
But I still popped big time. Still popped big time. And I really, really enjoyed the reveal. And it was the perfect way to head into the final episode of the show, I think.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the final episode will actually involve. This episode was all about building tension without releasing any of it, so next episode is just going to be this release of tension, hopefully, from start to finish, more or less.
Yeah, and it did it so damn well, and I'm so excited. And the fact we've got to wait another week, I'm like, oh!
Be here before we know it.
Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about with regards to this episode?
Not really, no. I think got everything. Yelena sending the text to Kate out of that mutual respect that grew out of their conversation. That was really good. It felt earned. It's just really good. It's really good that they're just pulling all these elements together. I think it's an expertly crafted show. and I'm fairly sure the finale is going to stick the landing. I've been lukewarm on the finales for some of the shows because I think they don't end in the best ways, but I'm confident this one will.
Yeah, I think you're right. And going back to what we've been saying from the very, very start of this episode, I think you're right because it's a street level show. So, Craig, it's been a pleasure. Tell people where they can find you on the internet elsewhere.
Sure. Well, as I said earlier, I can be found on Rarely Going, which is our Star Trek animated podcast. It's on hiatus at the minute until early January when Prodigy returns to screens. So that's not too far away. Looking forward to watching that again. I love that show. Can be found in a lot of podcasts, 616. If you want to prime yourself for Spider-Man No Way Home and hear me talk about the first five non-MCU Spider-Man films, all five non-MCU Spider-Man films, you can find me on those. Cropping up on various film things. Had a great chat with Bo Nicholson on Tick, Tick, Boom recently. It was quite an involved, in-depth, vulnerable conversation that we had, so that's definitely worth checking out. Outside of We Made This, I can be found on Neil Before Blog, so that's on Facebook and Twitter under there. You can, or neilbeforeblog.co.uk. I review Hawkeye, the Arrowverse stuff like Legends of Tomorrow and The Flash and so on, and Star Trek Discovery, so it can be found there. Our podcast, Neil Before Pod, is also attached. Recently released our Christmas episode, which was just playing dumb games. It was a lot of fun, so that's worth listening to. If you want to just listen to some nerds playing dumb games, that's what it is. And personally, now's time for my contractual obligation. I can be found under Nemesis4909 on Twitter, where it is not a Star Trek reference. I didn't start life as one. It started life as a Resident Evil reference and then evolved into a Star Trek reference eventually. So you can find me there. I don't post a lot, but if you tweet me, I will reply once I see it. So that's where you can find me.
If you're looking for me, I'm at MarkAdamsHC on Twitter and Instagram. I am quite good on Twitter. I am diabolical on Instagram. I literally have it because I run a business. If you're looking for podcasts that I'm on, I've also featured on quite a lot of podcasts, 616 recently. The Spider-Man films that Craig didn't do, I did. So there's a lot of Spidey chat from the two of us. And we will be on the next episode alongside Matt Latham to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home, because we're going to go and see that as soon as we can, and we're going to record as soon as we can, and hopefully it will be out as soon as possible. And elsewhere on the We Made This Network, I'm on Chucky Vision, which is a podcast dedicated to the Chucky franchise, all the Child's Play films, and the recent television series. You can also find me on Right in the Childhood, which is a podcast about kids' TV, where we take a look back at very fondly remembered telly shows and see whether the rose-tinted glasses are justified. And finally, I'm on a Red Dwarf podcast, which is called Shipwrecked and Comatose. That's at Red Dwarf Pod on Twitter. And we talk about Red Dwarf. We take a look at all the episodes of the show chronologically, but we also talk about the expanded culture as well, which I actually enjoy that more than the episodic stuff. And I do have another project in the pipeline, so just keep an eye out for that. I'm not going to tell you what it is in case it doesn't happen. So thank you for joining us for another episode of Podcast 616. And remember that we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to us and give us a rating and review wherever you can, if that is what you can do on where you listen. If you do want to help us financially, you can consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/wemadethis, there's extra stuff that you can get for throwing us a few quid a month. Hawkeye is not all that we're discussing, so after this, we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, but until then, just keep trying to hit that bullseye.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Right in the childhood.
Obviously, because of the inclusion of Firestar and Iceman, all the bets are off because weren't friends in the comic books.
No, it was bizarre. Like, Spidey and Iceman have become friends, and I wonder if they've become friends because of the, like, because of the show. Or
maybe.
Vice versa. But yeah, and we did notice a lot. Firestar was basically just Human Torch. They could have just... Jenny Storm.
She really did. Although really did just have the Human
Torch. I did
torches.
Get my hopes. I heard the last name Jones.
Pick a disc.
Evermore I've not listened to.
there's a special that's on Disney Plus actually, which I think is her playing Falkworld, which I might watch. Mm-hmm.
So good. It made me appreciate. I said after I watched that, I was like, every album, I don't care who releases it, every album needs something like this to accompany it, because it's, I think it adds so many layers to an album when you get to hear the artists specifically talk about why they wrote the song, and the producers are in the same room, like talking about the process. It just makes the album that much better. So that's a requirement now. Every album that comes out needs a documentary.
Frame to Frame.
I just want to say, I really love your philosophy about no matter how good or bad a movie is, there's a lot of effort that goes into it. I really like that philosophy, because I find myself grappling with that. It's kind of like, it's really easy to tear something down because the finished product that comes out in the cinema or on streaming is nominally bad, but it has actually had a fair amount of effort that went into it, regardless of how that translates.
I mean, Cats is a really good example of that, actually. If you actually look into the story of the visual effects on Cats and how it was literally the day before release, the visual effects team was still working on that movie.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.